We all want to save money, and there is no scarcity of apps meant to help us do that. We're looking at the tech and software tools that are most useful to help our money go further. It's all about personal finance and your pocketbook issues here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Budgeting is tough, right? Excel docs may be cumbersome and fussy, or maybe they're the perfect no-frills solution for you. What is your favorite budgeting app? What are your best digital tips and tricks for saving money, especially as you turn to online shopping amid COVID surge? We're at 800-642-1234. Kellyanne Smith is a personal finance expert at Forbes Advisor, which is Forbes Media's Consumer Finances Division. Kellyanne, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, when you take away those temptations of dining out in a restaurant or that work commute of putting gas in your gas tank, would you say it's been easier or more difficult for people to save money during this pandemic? What have you seen?
Well, I think that people have just different opportunities to spend money now. So, you know, maybe they're not going out and putting gas in their car every week, but they might be a little bored at home and they might be going online and doing some online shopping. There's definitely been, a little boost in the trend since COVID started. And so I think maybe people are It's safe to say they might be even spending the same amount or maybe even more. I mean, it's so easy to go online and do online shopping. So we've definitely see a little trend upwards there.
Wow. So there is, you can see that shift. Now, when you're talking about tech, there are so many budgeting apps out there. There's Mint and Every Dollar, Pocket Guard, Good Budget, so many. If we're trying to make sense of these and just spend less at the end of the day, which apps would you recommend?
Like you said, there's just so many different apps out there, and it really comes down to what's going to work for you. So I really recommend that people go, on the App Store, take a look at a few of the different apps. You can actually try them. A lot of them are free. One that I personally like is Capital with a Q, because you can break down your budget into, weekly spending goals. And, it makes it a lot easier to keep track of how much you're spending. It makes it easier to visualize how your purchase now might affect you at the end of the week in terms of your budget compared to the end of the month. But like I said, it really comes down to what's going to work for the user. So they should, just go and try them. I mean, there's no harm in trying. And there's so many out there that, you can keep yourself busy
sure.
for a little bit trying them out.
Some of them actually link up to your checking account or your credit card. So you're not actually having to do all that inputting. But what do you think of that? Building out more of a network where you're able to automatically see and analyze those transactions?
I think that can be really helpful for consumers. I know one of the biggest gripes about budgeting is it's so meticulous and time consuming. So when we have these resources that take out, the complication or the small tasks that make it, not fun or time consuming, that's when you can really see these products become really effective for people. I mean, the easier it is, the less clicks, the less taps on your phone, the easier it's going to be to really see where your money is going each month and also visualize your goals, for maybe saving or spending. And so I think that these are really great tools. And I think it's great that it's becoming automated, so to say.
Yeah. And credit cards also offer those spend analyzers where you can see, what you've spent on what portions of that pie. But, that pie is not the full picture of your total pie if you're not putting everything on that one credit card.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's a great point. But I think credit cards are tricky because it's so easy to swipe one and just kind of forget about it and think to yourself, maybe I'll pay it off next week or next month. So I think that these spending analyzers are great tools to just keep you on track with your credit card usage. It can be really easy to overspend on credit cards. So keeping an eye on that, you don't need to check it every single day, but at least check in every few days and really think about how much you've spent and, you know, stay on track. I think they can be really helpful for that.
We're talking with Kellyanne Smith, a personal finance expert at Forbes Advisor. We're looking at those money management apps and talking tech and your money, taking your questions. What apps have you used when shopping online? Is there a site you visit that's full of coupons? What do you want to know about apps like Venmo for transferring money? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kellyanne, there's a budgeting method called zero-based budgeting where, you know, your income minus your expenditures should equal zero. What do you think about that strategy?
I think this is a great strategy for people who really need to get a rein in on their finances in a short amount of time. Zero-based budgeting, it makes sure that every single one of your dollars is going towards, you know, whatever your financial plan is. So, you know, it can be a little intimidating to think about it. Like maybe you might hear this and think to yourself, so I have to be perfect with my spending each month. But like any other budget, you can always reevaluate. You can always readjust throughout the month. You know, maybe you take a little bit less from your spending amount, put it more towards saving. Or, you know, if you overspent maybe one week, you can go and rein in on your savings. So I think zero-based budgeting is a really great way for people to really get on track with their spending. It's a really great way to, you know, maybe get out of the habit of overspending. And it's an empowering form of budgeting because you know that every single one of your dollars is going towards your bigger financial goals. So I think that this is a really great strategy for people to use.
Yeah, it's like every penny has a purpose. Every dollar has a real purpose. It sounds almost empowering, as you say.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as with anything that you implement, it can maybe be a little bit hard to see the rewards at first, but like with anything else in your financial journey, the longer you stick to it, you know, the more you're going to see yourself progress on that path of your financial journey and, you know, hit some of those big money goals you might have.
I want to shift here and look at this shopping portal called Rakuten. It used to be called Ebates that gives you cash back on your purchases. What have you seen there from this platform, Rakuten?
Yeah, Rakuten is really cool because it offers cash back and rewards from tons of retailers, including ones that people use every day, like maybe Amazon or Macy's. And you make a free account and then you do all your shopping through the Rakuten portal. They also have an app. So I know a lot of people are maybe shopping from their phones. So that's an option as well. But they have, you know, coupons, promo codes, sales, discounts. And so when you purchase through the portal in your account, it'll start to accumulate that cash back. And then once you know, it hits a certain level, you can choose your payout method, which is really great. So it's just money going back into your pocket.
So how do you get the cash, though? Are there strings attached to that cash back?
I wouldn't necessarily say there are strings attached. Rakuten has, you know, these partnerships with a lot of these retailers. So I wouldn't necessarily say there are strings attached. I mean, with any type of online portal browser that you're using, you should always maybe think about how they're using your data as a consumer. You know, that's something to consider. But when it comes to getting the cash back, I would not say that there are like any strings attached.
We're saving money online, learning about money management apps with Kellyanne Smith, the Forbes Advisor. Have you noticed yourself spending more money online since the pandemic? Tell us about that. Are you ordering your groceries online? How is that going? How do you max out your coupons? Stick to a budget. Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Kellyanne Smith here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing how to keep a close eye on our finances through apps and finding out how to be savvy online consumers. It's an hour on your digital pocketbook here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you use an automated financial tracking system like Mint, like You Need a Budget, where you link up your checking account and credit cards to your budget? How has that worked for you? How do you motivate yourself to save more? Is it even possible to save with layoffs and furloughs? Join in with your money situation, your money question, 800-642-1234. We have Kellyanne Smith, a personal finance expert at Forbes Advisor, as our guide. Kellyanne, as we look at those money-saving apps, you've been looking into Capital One Shopping. This is something you install on your web browser. How does it work?
Yeah, Capital One Shopping, people might know it under its previous name, Wikibuy, but it's a browser extension. And after you add it, it will compare prices from retailers all over the internet. So this is a really great tool because as consumers, we have what seems like almost endless options for, you know, shopping now, especially with e-commerce. And so this browser extension, it will go through and it will compare prices for you. And then one really cool thing is that you can set price alerts on items that you're interested in, but might not be ready now to purchase. And so if the price drops on that item, it'll actually send you an alert, which I think is really great because that way, you know, it helps you stay within your budget, but it also helps you get the best deal.
Yeah, timing certainly helps there. Does the web browser extension find better prices on, say, like Amazon, on the giant site, Amazon?
I believe it does do Amazon. Yeah, it has thousands of retailers that okay. It's compatible with. Yeah, definitely. And I think you can also put in there that if you have an Amazon Prime account or not, so it can take that into consideration as well while it's scanning the internet. So yeah, this is just a really great tool to help people get the best deal on items.
So when we're downloading these free browser extensions and they're, you know, I'm always wondering, you know, what are we giving up here? Is there a way to protect your data while still getting the benefits of these apps?
I think that's a great question, and it's something, you know, a lot of people are interested in now. And so I think as consumers, what's really great with all of the options that we have is we can do our research before we commit to a single product or app or browser extension. You know, these companies are required to publish their terms and conditions and how they use your data. I think that people, if they're worried about this, you know, you don't have to go right now and download this. You can take some time to go and look and see what they're doing. If they're selling your data to a third party for advertising, that's usually the most common usage of data. And, you know, if you're not okay with that, then you can move on and look for the next product or app that might be better aligned with, you know, what you value as a consumer and your data.
Yeah, do quite a bit of reading. Kellyanne Smith is a personal finance expert. She writes for Forbes Advisor. We're talking about digital money management and tech that helps us save. You can join in. What are your best digital tips for saving money? Has online shopping burned you? What mistake did you make? How did you fix it? What do you want to know about how to be more savvy for giving gifts at the holidays? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Kellyanne, a lot of people have turned to buying their groceries online amid the COVID surge. But, you know, from a budgetary perspective, what should you bear in mind as you shop online for your groceries?
I think shopping online, it's good because A, you can, see how much is in your cart, see how much it's adding up. You're less tempted to maybe grab, you know, the random box of cookies as you're walking by, maybe something
impulse
that you
control.
Exactly. It's great for impulse control. And, a lot of these online grocery stores and whatnot, they have really great ways that they've implemented coupons into the online experience. But I think one thing that people should keep in mind is Are you going to have to pay for a delivery fee? Mm-hmm. Are the products marked up at all? Like, are you noticing that things might be a little more expensive because you're ordering online? And then, you know, as with any delivery service, how much are you going to tip the delivery driver? So those are all things that people should consider and work into their grocery budget if they do go the route of, you know, ordering for delivery via an app.
I noticed that when I checked out with my cart, some of the products that I could purchase from this retailer in store were not available for my pickup option. So I could only have a higher priced item for my dish soap, my hand soap refill, for instance, and not the full aisle of hand soap options that are available. So do you see things like this that our options may be more limited?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a really fair observation. But I mean, we're kind of living in a moment where some people don't have any other option. Mm-hmm. Some people can't go to the grocery store right now. And so I think that while it is limiting in a way, I think that it's still a great way for the people who need to stay home right now and, you know, the people who are doing their part to stop the spread of COVID. I think that it's a small trade-off when you look at the bigger picture of why we're using, you know, grocery delivery services right now.
When you mentioned that delivery, the fee, but also the tip, how are you working in the tip and how much do you tip for someone who drops your groceries off at your door?
I think it really depends on, you know, what you value, how much you think that you should tip. I think the general, what the etiquette experts will tell you is 15 to 20%. I mean, these people are going into the grocery store. They're working during a pandemic. They're helping you out in a way. And I think now is a good time for all of us to step up and help each other. Absolutely. And so, you know, when it comes to tipping, you need to work that into how much you're going to spend on your groceries. And you can just do that by, when you're building your grocery budget, start with how much you want to tip them and go from there.
So Kellyanne, we're closing in on the holidays, getting closer to Black Friday. What should we bear in mind as we look at holiday gift giving and purchases around Black Friday?
I think Black Friday gets a lot of hype, and sometimes people aren't necessarily getting the best deal, even though it might be advertised as that. So I think people should go into Black Friday with a solid plan. What do you want to buy? Where do you want to buy it from? How much are you going to spend? And I think that sticking to that plan is super important, because it's really easy to get tempted, you know, to buy something that wasn't on your list. You know, shopping is a big psychological game, and retailers know this. So going in with a solid plan and sticking to that plan, that's really important when thinking about Black Friday.
Let's bring in Sam now, joining us from Merrill this morning. Hi, Sam. What is your situation?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I just had I was wondering if I could get some advice here. Most of my finances are through PayPal. I've just found it, you know, kind of a handy way to do things. So I switched carriers last month for a cell phone, and I forgot all about the PayPal side, and I cannot access PayPal unless I get a text from that previous number. Mm. PayPal, since the virus came out, they got rid of all the live agents. There is no way to get a hold of them, and Synchrony Bank, which is PayPal credit, says that's, they don't handle that. So how would I be able to remedy that if I can't, because it sends you to the help desk and that makes me put my password in, and the only option I get is for a text.
Right, because of that the authentication. Kellyanne, what would you suggest there?
I think that's a really difficult situation, and I'm sorry that you're going through that. You know, I can't speak for PayPal, but I think in any of these types of situations, the best thing to do is, you know, pick up the phone and call if you can. You know, even if you don't get through the first time, you don't get to the solution that you're looking for the first time, like, keep trying, you know. you're the consumer here. You're using the product, and the product PayPal in general wouldn't be anything without the consumer. So definitely just keep at it and keep calling them. Hopefully they can come to a resolution for you.
So PayPal being a mobile payment service, so when you're ready to check out, many sites give you the option to use PayPal. What do you make of it? What do you see in it?
For PayPal, I think it's interesting that they've become so integrated with retailers. I think PayPal is one of the largest money transfer services now. So it absolutely makes sense that they've ventured into this territory. I know these transactions are secure, and that, you know, it just brings an added layer of convenience for the consumer. And so that definitely makes sense when talking about, you know, products like PayPal that have gotten so large.
Kellyanne Smith, Forbes advisor. She's our guide to how to save money shopping online and using budgeting tech. What do you want to know about apps like Venmo and Cash App? How do you plan to buy your holiday gifts this year? What strategy are you taking on spending when budgets are so tight? Be part of this Financial Hour, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Kellyanne Smith of Forbes after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for an hour on managing our digital wallet here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you use a grocery store app to see what's on sale? Do you download digital coupons? Are you able to save as you shop for essentials at home? We're discussing apps that help us save money, cash back offers, how they work, online coupons, promo codes. Join in with your tips and questions about digital money management tools, 800-642-1234. Kellyanne Smith from Forbes Advisor is our guide for the hour. So Kellyanne, you know, at the holidays, some people will need to forego that physical family gathering and may look to e-gift cards as a solution for gift giving. What should we know about these electronic gift cards?
Electronic gift cards are a really great way to, you know, send money to someone. I think that one thing that people need to think about, if, you know, it's like an electronic prepaid card, there might be a fee to load the card. I believe like American Express gift cards, they come with a fee. So before you pick which one you want to send, I think people need to read the fine print and make sure that however the amount of money that they want to send, that's going to be their total cost, or at least consider how much it might cost to load the card before they do so.
And tell that loved one to check their email. You know, that too is really important because they may not even realize it's there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, digital gift cards are really convenient, but I think that's a great point. Sometimes things can get lost in the digital shuffle. So keeping an eye on the email, that's a great point, definitely.
Sometimes people send money to family overseas. The World Bank expects that remittances from the developed world to less wealthy countries will total $550 billion this year. But there could be, as you mentioned, transaction costs. What apps can help make these money transfers smoother and less expensive?
Yeah, so it really depends on where you're sending your money. Like you said, there can be a lot of fees. There can be exchange rates. It depends on, you know, if you want to send cash and have the recipient pick it up somewhere. So you need to consider the fees. And then you also need to consider how long it's going to take for those funds to get to your recipient. You know, sending money isn't always the quickest option, especially when you're sending it overseas. Sometimes it can take 3 to 5 business days. But a lot of these products now, these money transfer services, they offer express options. So if you need to get it there ASAP, you can definitely pay a little bit more to have that transaction sped up.
Venmo is a popular one, a mobile payment service that is owned by PayPal. Venmo, you know, you can transfer funds to others via a mobile phone app. What should we bear in mind about these peer-to-peer payment apps?
Yeah, so Venmo is a great option if you are sending money within the U.S., definitely. I think people need to be really careful when they are sending money through these apps. They need to triple check that their recipient is who they intend it to be. I know PayPal now has Venmo now has a few safeguards to make this a little bit easier. So you can add people as friends. They kind of have made a social network out of it as well. And it'll also ask sometimes for you to confirm the recipient's last four digits of their phone number. So you just need to be careful and you need to double check before you hit send that you're sending it to the right person.
You know, we talked with Sam earlier about PayPal. Is there any benefit to paying through PayPal versus paying with your credit card on a vendor's site?
I think that right now, I'm not sure if there's, you know, hard benefits. I think that anytime you're making a transaction online, especially with these major credit card servicers, they use secure transaction portals and things like that. I think the biggest benefit of PayPal would be, you know, that it's already set up and it's convenient. Like you don't need to go in and add your credit card number or things like that because you're simply logging into your PayPal account essentially and everything's already stored in there. So it's more of a convenience factor definitely with PayPal.
Some retailers will push their special credit card offer at you, you know, use their card exclusively at their store and you get benefits from that. What do you see with those particular credit cards?
Retail credit cards, they're very enticing for exactly the reasons you said. They will offer lots of benefits, sometimes discounts, maybe special promos for cardholders. But as with any credit card, before you apply, you need to read the terms. What is the interest rate going to be? Is there going to be an annual fee? These are really important things that people need to consider before they apply, especially because applying for a credit card affects your credit score. So people need to keep that in mind. And I think for the most part, retailer credit cards tend to carry pretty high interest rates on them. So if this is a product that you want to use, you should use it responsibly and pay that bill off in full every month. So you're not, you know, racking up the interest costs.
And these retailers are really good at pestering you, asking every time when you get to checkout, do you want to open a card? You could save X right now. What should we think about those offers?
You know, they're doing what retailers do and they're trying to sell you something. Mm-hmm. So you should definitely keep that in mind when you're looking at these offers. And there's no reason why you can't say no. I mean, it's okay to open these cards, but I don't think that people should feel pressured to. I mean, the power is in your hands. You don't have to apply. And like I said, these cards, though they can be beneficial, they can, you know, cost money to obtain and they can have high interest rates. So definitely keep that in mind the next time you might be a little tempted to open one of these cards.
We're talking about how to be savvy with our money when we shop online. Our guide is Kellyanne Smith. She's a personal finance expert at Forbes Advisor. What are your tips or questions about using apps and saving money online? Has an online shopping experience burned you? What mistake did you make? How did you fix it? What do you want to know about how to be a more savvy online shopper? Join in at 800-642-1234. Kellyanne, there's also apps where you can buy now, pay later. Klarna, which is in this kind of scheme that offers shoppers interest-free financing on their retail purchases. What should we be aware of with apps like Klarna?
I think that people should be aware that, you know, it's not going to be interest-free for everyone. It really depends on your credit score. I mean, you're basically getting a small dollar loan with these apps, and you're paying them each month. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, if you don't have the money to make, you know, a purchase right now, you might want to reconsider just putting it on credit like this. That's essentially what it is. And some of these products might come with fees to purchase a product on it. And so people just need to consider those things. It can be really tempting, you know, maybe you have a big purchase and you don't want to pay it all at once now. That's great. But how is that going, that monthly payment, how is that going to fit into your budget? How are you going to manage that for the rest of the month or 2 months or 3 months, whatever the terms are, when purchasing with these apps? So I think they can be great tools, but also people can get into, you know, deep water pretty quickly with them, especially if this product is letting you do multiple purchases, split multiple purchases up with these like smaller loans. It can be really easy for that to, you know,
to
get
snowball.
Out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, you're in this situation like, oh no, I have $300 worth of payments I have to make on this each month. So
yeah, if the cost isn't viable now, how will it be viable in three months from now?
Exactly. Exactly. So people just need to consider that. And if there's something that you want to purchase, I always recommend purchasing it in cash first, but sometimes in emergencies, you can't do that. So definitely just consider that monthly cost of using that app and using that small dollar loan.
Kellyanne, have you seen any digital traps that have been cropping up since the start of the pandemic, or anything that online consumers should be particularly aware of?
I mean, there's always scams out there all the time. I know there have been a few COVID-related scams, maybe either from unemployment to stimulus checks, things like that. But the FTC actually has a really great resource where people can log online, go to their scam alert section. They can read on, you know, what are the most recent scams going on? What are some warning signs? What are ways to protect them? So I definitely recommend people check that out to become well-versed on what might be going on right now. There's just so many opportunities for scams now. It's hard to keep track of all of them. So the FTC does a really
good
job.
Federal Trade Commission.
Correct. Correct. It has a really great portal for consumers where they can read up on what's going on and what they need to look out for.
Yeah. And so if you think that something sounds too good to be true, you should just step back, hold back, and don't pull out your wallet. Don't pull out that credit card.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, if you see a company maybe that sounds unusual but has a really good product you're looking at or something and you're still not sure, you can also go to the Better Business Bureau's website, look up that company, see if it's accredited, registered, and you can also see complaints. You can view complaints right there on the website. So that's also a good resource for consumers to utilize.
We're leveraging tech to save money with Kellyanne Smith as our guide. She's a personal finance expert at Forbes Advisor, which is Forbes Media's consumer finances division. Are you using mobile apps for things like saving on a budget or to build up an emergency fund? Is an app helping you get closer to a financial goal? Have you allowed an app to analyze your income and spending habits? What did it tell you? And are you following its advice? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Kellyanne Smith here on the Ideas Network. It's Pocketbook Issues here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with Kellyanne Smith of Forbes Advisor. We're getting suggestions on how to put tech to work to help us save money, especially as we shop more online and not in stores during the pandemic. Kellyanne, this is going to feel like whiplash, but I want to talk about currency, like the currency you put in your hands that you can touch, those things called coins. And, you know, we've heard that there is this U.S. coin shortage. What can you tell us?
Yeah, a lot of people at the, I believe it was pretty much at the beginning of the pandemic, maybe around April, were really concerned that all of a sudden we didn't have enough coins and people were calling it the coin shortage. But after I did some digging, it turns out it was more of a disruption in the coin circulation. That's how the Federal Reserve was describing it. And what that means is, you know, people were staying at home while shelter-in-place orders were in effect, and they weren't going to the car wash and putting their coins in there. And then, you know, the bank wasn't coming and picking that up. And so the flow of coins really slowed down. And that's why we started seeing some of these retailers ask people to pay in exact change or, you know, with credit or debit. But I think the big takeaway here is we're not running out of coins. The coins have not disappeared. They're just maybe sitting in a jar on your counter. And, you know, the Federal Reserve did like an outreach program. The Secretary of Treasury also, you know, tweeted about it. Like, you guys, let's go out and spend our coins. We need to get this flow going again. So a big takeaway here is we're not running out of coins. They're just in different places now.
Well, that's hard to do, to spend those coins if you can't go to the bank to go inside to dump your coins into that coin filter thing so that you can then, you know, put that cash into your account. I know I went through the drive through at McDonald's and said, hey, you know, we have limited coins available. Just, you know, just be aware of this. And so I think it does have consumers a little bit concerned about, you know, whether coins are getting the short shrift here and that we're being pushed to a digital world.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a valid concern, but I really don't think, you know, we're going to be in a cashless society next month, okay, so to say. I think that, you know, coins aren't going away. There are people who don't have access to electronic checking accounts, credit cards, things like that. They don't have debit cards. Like, there are people in this country who don't have access to things like that. So I think it's fair for people to be concerned, but I think right now what we should focus on is, you know, going to your local business and paying, you know, with change if you can, and getting that flow going again.
All right. So you suggest trying cash if you have those coins, using those coins, maybe counting them out beforehand so they're ready to go when you're doing that transaction.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, it can really help out your favorite local small business, because, you know, every time you swipe your credit card at those places, they have to pay a fee to the transaction processor and things like that. So anytime you can pay in exact change, especially if you can do it with coins, I think that it will go a long way. It'll help out your local business, and it'll also help get that coin flow going again.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because those small dollar transactions, if you put them on a credit card or you make it a digital purchase, that could end up really, someone has to pay for that, those transaction fees. And does that usually just land on the retailer?
It depends. Okay. A lot of these processors, they do charge the retailer a fee. It's usually a percentage of the transaction. That's mm-hmm. why, you know, if you go to your local bodega or deli, they're going to give you a minimum that you can pay with your card, you know, $5 minimum, $10 minimum. And that's because they're trying to do their part to balance out, you know, the amount that they have to pay to the merchant processor. So that's something to think about, you know, next time you go to your favorite local small business. If, you know, do you really want to use your card, or if it's possible, can you use cash? You can help them out.
Well, Kellyanne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Kellyanne Smith is a personal finance expert at Forbes Advisor, Forbes Media's Consumer Finances Division. The publication focuses on personal finance news, reviews, and advice. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story in honor of Veterans Day, which is today.
When the United States declared war on Germany in 1917, millions of young men across the country enlisted to serve in what they believed would be the war to end all wars. One of those men was 21-year-old J. Vincent Hood of Racine, Wisconsin. His great-grandson, Mark Sullivan, interviewed him about World War I nearly 80 years later. Mark brings us this story just ahead of Veterans Day.
Johnny, get your gun, get your gun, get your gun. Take it on the run, on the run, on the run.
For 4 years, the Germans and the French had fought a war. Trench wars, they call them.
That's the voice of Vincent Hood, lifelong resident of Racine, Wisconsin, combat veteran of the First World War, and my great-grandfather. In less than a year's time, Vincent went from selling real estate in Racine to the horrors of the Western Front. When the 32nd Division first arrived in Europe, they were confined to the trenches, fighting alongside the famed 10th French Army.
Say the French drove the Germans back to their trench, and then they quit. And the Germans, in the meantime, got to build up their army again, and then they drove the French back to their trench, and they built up again. And that way it went on for 4 years.
I remember my grandfather talking about the war, about pulling great big guns across the front on horse-drawn carts, or the time he got caught up in clouds of mustard gas, his fingers pruned and skin yellowed for days. He told me about the trenches, about the mud, the muck, the smell. Commander of U.S. Forces General John J. Pershing quickly lost patience with the stalemate of trench warfare and opted to go on the attack. What followed was a series of battles known as the Hundred Days Offensive.
So when the Americans came in, they didn't want to. No trench warfare. The only way you're going to end this thing is not allow any trench. Keep them off guard. Keep hitting them all the time. They can't get set. And we were not allowed to go into any trenches.
Vincent and the 32nd Division forged ahead, leading four major campaigns and fighting in two more, never once ceding ground to the German army. It was here that they earned the nickname Les Terribles, the Terrible Ones. In September of 1918, the 32nd became the first Allied division to break through the famed Hindenburg Line, a 50-mile-long, 3.5-mile-deep network of fortified German defenses. The end of the war seemed near.
When the Germans saw that, the French army, he said, "Fini la guerre." That means the end of the war. We realized what a difference it was if we couldn't fight in trenches.
The American punch counted. War-weary Germans surrendered in droves. The end was near at hand. Finally, on that unforgettable November the 11th, the Blessed Armistice came to the trench.
After the war, Vincent returned home to Racine and to his wife, Marion. Together, they raised four children and dozens of grand and great-grandchildren before Vincent passed away in 1997 at the age of 101. As we commemorate a full century since the armistice, I can't help but consider the life of Vincent Hood, a man who came in with the carriage and left with the space shuttle, a life that spanned from Grover Cleveland to Bill Clinton. 100 years feels like ancient history, but my relationship with my great-grandfather is proof that our history is still here with us today, as more than just ghosts and memories. Our past is our present. And so as we honor all veterans on November 11th, let's not forget the first to experience the horrors of modern warfare. Those soldiers came home victorious, raised their families through the Great Depression, and then sent their sons off to avenge Pearl Harbor and beat back the Nazi menace. If the citizens and soldiers who defeated Hitler and Hirohito are the greatest generation, then what do we call Vincent's generation?
Mark Sullivan studies audio engineering in Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I just want to take a moment here to say I hope you join 1A's host Jen White and me for a lunchtime conversation on Thursday, November 19th at noon. Grab your lunch, log in. We'll get to hear from Jen about covering the election at the helm of a national talk show. And that's to RSVP, wpr.org/presents. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.